So me ken weinen, me ken davenen, in se helft. Aber was me titof mit simche, ken ne schatz was auf dem.
Do you think that we have a shidduchim crisis right now?
For those that are married, we don't. A wife happens to be a brilliant answer to 99% of the world's problems.
I just went to the real estate show because I figured there's going to be a lot of people with a lot of money, and I don't give a shit. I want to be by that show.
Remember this. It's never what you say. It's only how you say it. Why go elsewhere and get ripped off when you can come to us? And then I passed the restaurant upstate New York. It said, eat here or we'll both starve. Right?
I want to enjoy life. So I will do anything that it takes for me to enjoy life and to help others enjoy life.
If you want to be a good salesperson, think that person's position and that will make you a better salesperson.
How does it feel to have a lot of money? I mean, they call it FU money, right? Like, how does that feel?
I wouldn't know.
Welcome to another episode of Positivity. Today I have here Rabbi. I can say Rabbi Shia Rubenstein because he does so many things and which can be interesting to people. First of all, he's an entrepreneur. He's also a singer and a chazan. He also has a lot of real estate. He has a company that I think also builds real estate for people. And he also is the leader of the JCon event, the 7th show coming up this year. So he does a lot of networking events. And many people have asked, when we do this podcast, I should allow the guests to introduce themselves. And I feel like especially when we have somebody that has such a wide journey and does so many different things, it is interesting to hear his story. Sometimes I just love to jump into the gist of it, but today I am going to ask Shia to tell his story and tell us with what he's involved in. I also just want to remind you to please like this podcast, subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment. I really love hearing all of your feedback. Also, if you want to join the conversation, the link to my WhatsApp is in the description, so you can join the conversation and never miss an episode and stay in touch. Thank you so much, Shia, for being here. It's mamash a pleasure. Some know you as Josh Rubenstein, Shia Rubenstein, but thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Ellie, for the opportunity to be on your podcast. I was actually extremely excited. I've done many podcasts, but yeah. You bring that beautiful energy, and it just makes things happen themselves. So thank you for having me on. It's a true pleasure to be part of your...
Thank you. And you ordered us sushi. So that's a first. A guest that comes to my podcast brings me food. I think that's really, it shows what kind of person you are.
Thank you. Never come empty handed. You know, I don't know if I should go off over here on a joke, but there was once a lady in Florida. She tells her son, you're going to come visit me. Do you know how to get to my apartment? He says, I'm not sure, Mom. Where is it? She says, well, you're going to go down Collins Avenue. And then you're going to see the building. So as you're getting to the main entrance, go like this, and you'll get in the front door. The elevator, hit penthouse, and you'll see penthouse 1 and 2, then hit penthouse 2, and that's where I am. He says, Ma, why do you keep on doing this? She says, you're not going to come empty-handed, right? So never come empty-handed, but I'm like truly that. Grateful. And to give you a 30-second synopsis of myself, so I do go by Shia and Josh. I say that when people ask me what I do for a living, I tell them it's about helping other people, but I do other things paying the bills.
Yeah, absolutely.
So first and foremost, I get a big sipaka nefesh of being involved in community and helping people, whether it be through the JCC of Marine Park, which is a social service and community-based organization, also through JCon, which helps over 12,000 people a year by doing... courses, job hiring, mentorships, one-on-one mentors, and of course all the major events like you are familiar with the real estate, but we do it for other industries also, like e-commerce and elder care and healthcare and education and career. So we've done many events.
Yeah.
But it's
I just went to the real estate show because I figured there's going to be a lot of people with a lot of money and I don't give a shit. So I want to be by that show because I don't do real estate. So you help them. That's why I went to the show and I ended up meeting you over there. And I just had a lot of fun because everybody was there in a suit and a tie and they were doing all professional stuff. And I'm a young entrepreneur. I make my money not from real estate. I make the amount that they make in a building for 20 years. I can make from one YouTube video if this goes viral. You know what I'm saying? I felt very empowered and alive at this show. It was a lot of fun. And I'm like pushing through and everybody's looking at me. Who's this kid over here? Like young. It was fun for me. That's why I went to the show. But then I ended up meeting you and it got a lot of meaning behind it and stuff
Thank
like that.
You.
But I felt like I want to be by the real estate show where essentially every fifth person owns buildings and has money.
I definitely hear it. But again, you brought another added value where people that do the real estate, they want a little bit of entertainment and fun in their life. And you bring the joy and the energy and the social media aspect. So it's different and a great contrast.
Yeah.
So that's why you were a big hit also at the event, even
oh,
though there
you.
Were 1,000 people coming for real estate construction management.
Yeah.
So definitely complimented each other.
I absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate that. I love it. People constantly ask me, Ellie, what's your mission or whatever. We're going to get to you in a second. I'm just saying, like, people always ask me this question, and my answer is I want to enjoy life. So I will do anything that it takes for me to enjoy life and to help others enjoy life. That's my mission. It's not about, there's so many ways to help others, as you mentioned. For me, I just want to show people how to have a good life. And that involves sometimes hard work. It's not just the enjoy life kind of part, but there's, you could enjoy life. Most people that I talk to, they're like, you know, struggling is inevitable. You got to struggle. You got to suffer. You got to, okay, that's very nice. Maybe it's part of growth, but it doesn't have to always be that way. So, all right, I'm going to turn it back to you. So I do want to hear your story a little bit, how you got into this, because people always look at a successful person. They want to know what was his journey. Like, it's just fascinating to hear the story. And then the second part of the question will be, what are you involved in right now? Okay.
Sure.
Take it
you
away.
Know what they say? They say you could work hard 20 years to be an overnight success.
Yeah.
When you make mistakes for 20 years and you learn from your mistakes, then eventually you become an overnight success.
Yeah.
But like everybody else, I also grew up with yeshiva education. Did not have the opportunity to go to college and whatnot, just because, you know, the way we grew up in our yeshiva systems, we don't do that. And I felt at the time that I wished there were mentors and people that can teach me along the way instead of me learning from my own mistakes, which right. I did. And Baruch Hashem, many years later, not only did I have the ability to, Baruch Hashem, you know, build a business, but I focused a lot of time starting in 2008 and then again in 2015 to really create a bunch of different projects which will address helping people that are underserved, that need help for social services and whatnot. And then a lot of projects that are specifically to help people that want to be successful in business. Because as the Rambam teaches us, you can either give a person a fish or you can give them the rod in which to fish.
Right.
So that's really been the focus on the JCon and many other initiatives.
And what did you personally start off after yeshiva? You got married or whatever. What was your first introduction to business or helping people?
Sure. So I got married when I was 20. I stayed in yeshiva for about 2 years. And then I needed to find a job, but I didn't know anything.
Okay.
So I figured the easiest way to get into the business world is to buy something that's existing. So I found for $5,000... a company that was doing like personalized photos, you know, like on the t-shirts, on the mouse
yep.
pads. And I was trying to figure out, how do you scale that type of business? So he had a few organizations that
Why
were
Why did
ordering.
You even think of going to buy a business? Why didn't you just go work a job?
Oh, very good question. So it's a combination of my personality. I have a hard time just listening to people.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I have a vision and people are just going to tell you what to do. So
Absolutely.
It didn't always work.
They say what all entrepreneurs have in common is they can't follow orders. They can't work for somebody else.
Right.
So they choose a path.
In retrospect, I should have chosen maybe a great industry, let's say real estate, work for the best company, regardless of what they pay. So I would get my Harvard education in real estate from an amazing company and then take that back and do my own, which is probably what I should have done. But again, being 22 years old, not sure, I figured $5,000, I can chance. It even came with a computer. And in those days in 1999 or 2000, computers, email, Yahoo, we didn't even know what that really was at the time. So I bought this business and then I was trying to figure out scalability. How do I get to make money? I have a machine. I know how to put a t-shirt, a picture. I can take a vase, cut out the picture, and put it into a nice vase. But how do you sell it to people? You're going to spend $50,000 on advertising? So then I realized, and I don't know if you're young enough, you may not know what this is. It was something called a photo lab where people would develop pictures. They would have a 35 millimeter camera, take pictures, and there's something called film that you would take out.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would bring it to a store, and for like $10 or $13, they would give you 35 pictures.
Right.
That's before the digital era. So there were many stores throughout everywhere that would have, you know, Photoshops. And what I did is I made beautiful little slips. I took a picture of my daughter in a, like a onesie together with a picture. And I made, you know, I put in a few photos in that beautiful insert of, you know, t-shirts and mugs and different things that you could have that personalized. Mm-hmm. I loved personalization because I'm very into personalization. You know, when I come for you, it's about you.
Yeah.
So I made this beautiful insert. And then what I did is I spent the next month just going around to 250 Photoshop stores. And I said, I would like to help you make more money. Because remember, it's never about me. It's about you.
Right.
People don't want you to say, oh, this is my name. This is what I do for a living. People are not interested about you. People like to talk and people like to hear about them.
Right.
So I told them, you have a beautiful store. Number one, you always start with a compliment. You have a beautiful store.
Right.
And
because everybody loves a compliment.
Yeah, so everyone loves a compliment.
Nobody's going to reject a compliment.
Right. So I said, I love your store. You do beautiful work. And I think that I can help you make additional profit besides for what you're doing with no hard work on your end.
Wow.
So when you take your film and you develop it, you put 35 or 36 photos into an envelope, put my insert in also. So when people will pick up the pictures, they open up the envelope, they see the insert, they'll choose whichever photo, and then they'll see for $13.95 they can put their daughter's photo
also on a cut. Yeah.
So they'll just leave the photo with you, or you have the negative, and you'll just print out for 35 cents another picture of that negative. All you have to do is just tell them to leave it behind, take the $13.95 from them. I'll give you 35% of every single deal that comes in. And they loved it.
It was too good to turn down.
Yeah.
That's what I love
about
it. So
it took them nothing. So essentially, I ended up building up a network of about 125 stores. And it was so interesting to see the pattern of every store in a different neighborhood when those people respond. Like certain people get paid Friday and they would come on Friday to do it. Some people don't work Sunday, they would do it on Sunday.
Wow.
So it was interesting to see every community. But essentially, I had 125 stores giving me roughly 3 to 7 orders a week. So I had 1,000 orders a week.
That's genius.
To be able to...
So you were 22 and you were making nice amount of money, basically.
So I was making decent money. But again, it was a lot of... It was all me. I didn't have the seichel to be a company. I was an individual running a business.
Right.
So I went, let's say, every Sunday and every Tuesday to pick up, and every Thursday and every Friday to deliver.
Wow.
And I made my rounds, and I tried saving money, so don't ship it to me. And email wasn't such a big thing, so they couldn't email me really everything. There were no forms. It wasn't very sophisticated. It was just the beginning of like...
So this was your first business?
That was my first business.
Okay, where did it go from there?
Then from there I decided...
First of all, did you... Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Then I decided from there, why am I just doing it over there? Let me try to grow. So I... My next reaction was, I'm going to go to the beaches and the malls and open these stores myself.
Wow.
And I did it a little bit, but it turned out to be much more difficult than I expected because the beaches were only open 2.5 months a year from Memorial to Labor Day. And if it rains, no good. If it rains, then it's good for the mall, but it's bad for the beach.
Mm.
And then for the mall, no one is there a whole week, only on Shabbos, which is a different problem.
Yeah.
So it and also you have to hire workers and this cash. So it became too big of a deal, and I saw that it didn't make sense. So I wanted to stay within the personalized space because I really enjoyed it, but I felt like this is not enough. So I shifted into starting to offer graphics and marketing, and then on the commercial side, you know, when they have your pen with your logo and your bag with your logo. So I went in for the next few years, about 3 years, to do all personalized promotional imprinted products, graphics, marketing, customer retention, employee retention, incentive programs. So I went into that whole space of being in the promotional products marketing industry.
Wow, fascinating. And do you still have this business? Or Did you sell it or what's...
So in 2004, I woke up one morning and I said, this is the most important question you have to ask yourself. Am I going to make $1 million here? Or am I just going to make a $10,000 and $50,000 and $100,000? Yeah. I said, to answer that question, you have to look at the industry and say, out of 100 people that do any industry, do you have to be from the top 2% to be successful or from the top 50%? So if I say real estate, nursing homes, software, 50% of the people that you know are making a good living. You don't have to be from the top 1%. If I tell you, and again, this is not an offense to those industries, but if I tell you shoemaker, dry cleaners, making copies of keys, if I tell you those companies, you have to be from the top 1% to make $1 million, or not even a million, to make $300,000, because...
So many people.
Because you don't, it's not a very big business, unless, you know, dry cleaners. Oh, if you have 10 of them, and you have... But most of the people in the dry cleaning or making copies of keys or shoemakers are not making serious money. So that means for me to make serious money, I have to be that top 1%. And what's the likeliness? So I decided it's time for me to go into construction or real estate. There was only one problem. I didn't know what a 2x4 was. And I didn't know what real estate was. And I didn't know maybe even how to spell the word real estate. But I wanted to do it. So I was trying to figure out. So I made it my mission for the next year or two years that I would try to fix and flip. So I would go into contract to buy a house. And in those days, it was much easier where you were able to get home equities to do the renovation. But I took a partner that knew construction. And I would tell the partner, don't order anything. Whenever you need something, send me to this store. I want to go to the lumberyard and say, I would like to have a 1-inch coarse nails, screws, 2x4, sheetrock, 2x4x10. I would hear the words and I would pick it up. I didn't want to be the delivery boy, but I knew that's the only way for me to start understanding what I'm saying.
Right.
And I would go every day to the job for like 3 hours, 4 hours, just to watch. Like, do you do electric before you do sheetrock? Do you do 2x4 framing before you do beams? Like, I knew nothing. But over the course of the next year or two, I really started understanding what things are. And that kind of helped me. I did about 10 fix and flips.
Oh, wow.
So that kind of got me into understanding the business, but I only did it with people who had skin in the game. So it's not like I hired a contractor that doesn't care. Only I hired a partner who knows construction, so if I lose, they lose. So that's skin in the game plus expertise. And as I started getting more and more into construction, I sold my original business to one of my salespeople, because I figured that I ultimately did not want to be in that business.
Right.
So this would kind
of... You
want
to share how much it sold for? I'm just super curious.
I don't remember exactly, but it was 2.5 times earnings.
Wow.
And it was also a big incentive to the fellow who was working, and he had put in a few years of
time. So, yeah. Oh, so you're meaning you gave it to him a little bit for less. You could have sold it for more.
Right. So I told him I'll give it to him for 2.5 earnings. So just for argument's sake, if it was making $750,000, and of that, let's say 300 was profit, so it would go for 2.5 times.
Right. So approximately.
But again, I don't remember because this is going back 20 years ago.
Right. But it sold nice, you're saying. You made. Yeah. What did you do with that money?
I invested it into the next few fix and flips.
So a lot of people will be listening to this, especially in Galat, especially when I have a mail on. A lot of in Galat listeners, it goes around even more. Both go around, both listen, but a lot of people will ask now, fix and flips, like this is something that there's thousands of in Galat that are doing it or want to do it. So do you think that it's still a good business? Are you still doing it, by the way?
So I think fix and flips, construction, development, I do different things within the space, but it's always about creating that right angle. So 10 people can do the same thing and not make money.
Wow.
But if you know how to structure the deal, if you know how to finance the deal, if you know maybe how to get a seller's concession or how to get financing from the seller or know how to get the construction money, it's always about the angle. It's never about, oh, he does real estate, I could do real estate. It's very nuanced. Like when I do developments on the same block, there could be two different stories.
Wow.
In the same block, there could be a reason why this is good or not. There can be something nice that you add that creates real value. So it's always about creating that angle that makes you different from just someone else. So to answer your question, can you make money in fix and flips? Of course, and of course not. So it's true that interest rates are higher, so it's a little bit more difficult to buy and to sell. But if you do something that's of real added value, you could do very well with it. And I have done it, and today I do less with fix and flips and more with bigger developments, just because...
Yeah, that's what I figured.
It's a little bit... When it's bigger and there's more in the numbers, it's true you're taking bigger risk, but when you do, let's say, a $5 million deal, if something costs 200 grand more, you could deal with it.
Yep.
But if you do a fix and flip that you can make 100,000 and it costs you 66,000 more...
You're losing your profit and the time and the energy. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, when you think of fixer flips, it's like buying a chatka house and you're selling it for a little bit more. But I'm guessing, I was thinking you're probably now doing fix and flips for a big building that you're now selling for even more, or making it even bigger and stuff like that. Generally speaking, owning real estate, at what point did you say that you want to start owning the real estate that you were fixing and flipping? I mean, I'm trying to ask personal questions because I really want to learn, and I know for people it's going to be very interesting. So at any point, if you don't want to answer about personal finances, you don't have to answer. But at which point did you say, let me start owning these houses rather than just fixing and flipping?
That's a very good question. So my model at the time was try to hold on to some that's more valuable to you, and then fix and flip the others to have the money to be able to continue. So I bought two homes and I held on to them, and I bought the other eight homes one at a time, or two at a time, or three at a time. And like the first one I bought and just flipped immediately. The next one I bought, I put in about $80,000 and I sold it for $100,000 profit. And I tried doing that mixed, where I would have enough money to be able to, you know, do the work and keep on to one or two. So that ratio would work. Because remember also, when you're not very big in real estate, you're also taking a chance. Let's say you make over 10 homes and you have a problem with some tenants, or it costs you more than you expect, or some of the homes are empty. It can cost you $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month. So you have to be very careful not to
get drained.
But if you minimize your risk, and you need some money to invest also, so let's say I would buy three and keep one. And
right. So constantly the houses that you kept, the houses that you flipped were constantly were giving you the money to be able to buy more.
Exactly.
For yourself and to keep them.
Right. So you try...
Even though there was risk in keeping it, but you still had a few more that you were at that time...
Right. So I would say for people going into the business, if you want to go into the fix and flip, there's a few things to keep in mind. First of all, am I buying it right? Number two, what's the real value that I'm adding? Number three, do I really know all my costs? Because you have to keep in mind, when you buy it, there's closing costs. And then there's title bills. And then you have transfer tax on the selling on the way out. If you're going to take a broker, you have... So there's a lot of fees. A lot of people are like, oh, I buy it for 300, put in 100 is 400, I sell it for 500, I made 100.
Right.
But if you think that way, and you don't think about 20,000 in closing costs in, 10,000 out, 20,000 for broker, 20,000 for carrying costs as you pay interest, then you don't pay attention, you don't make
And
that
is it
money.
Important to start off with liquid? Like, do you have to have in your account 50 to 100,000 or more to start off? Or if somebody wants to get into real estate, they can technically now either borrow money from friends or take a loan and start this kind of career or game or whatever.
So if you want to go into fix and flip, you could definitely take money from friends or you could take a loan. But keep in mind that 90% of businesses fail in America for two reasons: lack of capital and lack of management. Most people I see in real estate that don't make it to the finish line are because they don't have enough money. Mm-hmm. Between 90 and 95%, or maybe even higher.
So because they never had the money to even start.
So they
start,
think, oh, I'm buying it, I have to put 10% down, I need 100,000 to fix, so I need 160,000. So they take 160, and when things cost more and expenses are higher, they don't have a way to get to the finish line.
Right.
So if you think you need 150 and you don't have access to 250, don't do it.
So you're saying they should have the access, basically, before they get
started.
You
must have the access, because it will always cost you more than you expect, especially if you're new.
So at which point do you make money, if it's costing more?
Right. So that's why it's a combination of making sure you really know your expenses, and when you consider how much it's going to cost, to know that it will cost more and that you'll still make money.
Yeah.
Never work on thin margins, because then you don't have that ability to move.
Right.
So let's say you bought a house for 300, and you say, if I put in 100 to make it 400, I could sell it for 700, then you know there's enough room. If you know that you'll be in for four and you could sell it for 460, you know that you're not going to make money because closing, over cost, you're not going to make money. So if the margins are very thin, don't even go there.
What does a healthy margin look like?
So if there's that 25 to 50% up, then it's worth it. And again, everyone has a little bit of a different angle. And like you say, some people will buy, fix, and flip. I'll come in, let's say, and I'll be like, okay, this is a certain zoning. So I see how I could change the classification on the first floor to a daycare because that rents for much higher. Plus, I can add two more floors. Plus, I could change the CFO and divide each floor into two apartments and make them beautiful, cool apartments with tall ceilings. And now that will give me $20,000 a month instead of me looking at a two-family house and saying, oh, if I make over the two-family, $3,000 plus $3,000 is $6,000.
Right.
So it's never about what you see in front of you. Think big picture. Think, what is the angle? What am I doing different? Am I just, you know, it's
or call somebody that knows a little bit better than you. Don't be shy. We were discussing this Shabbos, if it's worth buying a house, if everybody should buy a house or not, because it's liability versus asset. And I'm curious what your opinion on that is. Should an averaging amount of family buy a house, and which basically now they got themselves a liability because they must pay the mortgage, they must pay taxes, they're going to end up paying on their house probably twice or three times the amount of money eventually. They can be taking now the money, they can be paying rent $2,000 and putting the other $3,000 they would be paying for a mortgage that would be $5,000, they can put the $3,000 into the S&P 500 every month and have in 10 years from now have the entire house money's worth. So I'm curious your opinion.
I think it's
this.
A very good question. So I would say as follows. I think it's a great idea to buy the house for two reasons. Number one, when you're young and you're 20, 22, 25, and you don't have the same expenses as someone who has five children in yeshiva with two cars and you have to pay for seven camps and clothing. So your expenses are still much lower than when you're 35 years old.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So number one, even though you're right that that extra $3,000 in the S&P compounded interest over 30 years can do more, the fact is that you're gonna want the house. You need a place to live. The houses are gonna become more expensive. You need stability. So by buying the house, I'm not saying you have to buy it day one when you get married, because you are right. There's a huge difference between $2,000 rent and maybe a $4,000 mortgage, because the mortgage includes insurance and tax and the mortgage payments at a higher interest rate. But I do think that, you know, if you wait a little bit until you have that good down payment and you feel that you could swing the mortgage, I think it's important because A, you're going to have that dream of American home ownership. Number two, the value of the asset will go up. As the value of the asset goes up, you'll have the ability to borrow money against it in case of an emergency.
Wow.
And if you don't do it, you're not going to do it. When you're 30 with more expenses and the house that you could have bought 5 years ago went up another $350,000. So for all those reasons, I say buy as soon as you can. And if you can't afford $1 million house, buy a $500,000 house. But at least you have something to trade that in 5 years will be
so
more
So why
valuable.
Do people like Robert Kiyosaki, the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or Grant Cardone tell people, don't buy a house. You're creating yourself a liability and it's just going to cost you money. Just pay rent.
Right, because their train of thought is, like you said, first of all, I can go from place to place. I don't have to worry. I don't have to worry about all the expenses associated with breaking items, cutting the grass, taxes. But I hear what they're saying, but I disagree because I think it builds wealth and it builds stability.
Yeah.
And if you're in mid-America, it may apply differently. But when you're in specific areas that keep on going up in value, if you take a look, regardless of any downturn from the last 110 years, there's never been a time that you can go back now and tell me that real estate... A house is worth less now than 10 years ago, than 50 years ago, than 100 years ago. So it's consistently going up in value. Maybe if you compare it to an S&P, but I still think for all those reasons, buy it when you can. If you can't afford the top tier, buy the middle one.
Right.
But don't not buy.
So basically, I should buy a house.
Buy.
Okay.
If you can afford.
I want to borrow $100,000.
See, borrowing to buy is different than having at least a down payment, plus knowing that you can make that mortgage payment.
Exactly. This is what we're talking about. Save some money.
Yeah.
Wow. This is truly fascinating. Okay, so I'm curious. One very important thing is sales. So I remember we met at the last JCon. I think it was actually PCon, because I know you went to that show, and we were sitting there for about 20 minutes, and you were helping me develop the sale for my business even better. So I feel like sales is such an interesting topic, because everybody has a different aspect of it, and not everybody's in it, but I did learn that everybody has to be a good salesperson, because at some point you're selling your own kids, you're selling your wife, not in the wrong way, but you have to make a pitch. You're selling on your friends, you're selling your... And then again, to have any kind of business, you have to be able to sell. So what did you learn in your course of sales? Obviously, you started directly in sales with that printing business, but now you're also doing real estate, so you're dealing with bigger fish and people in the industry. What did you learn in sales? Meaning to say, when you meet somebody and you want to close a house, what's your approach to sales? You meet them, Shalom Aleichem, you mentioned giving a compliment. Run me down. What's another few tips?
So here's the secret sauce. You're asking a brilliant question, because the biggest mistake people think, whether it's on LinkedIn or whether it's when I meet people or when they call me, people will get on the phone and start telling you about themselves and what they do for a living and what they sell. 99% of people don't care. No one wants to be sold to.
Yeah.
So for you to say, hi, my name is Ali Weber, and I have a social media marketing agency, and I'll help you manage this and sell. Okay.
Right.
But people care about themselves.
Zach, try this for a change. Hi, I know that you are Shia Rubenstein. I know that you do amazing real estate. I actually have an idea that can really help you out and increase your profits across all of your...
Exactly. So when you start becoming a solution, or you say something that is of interest, people hear you. So
wow.
I'll give you, for instance, last week I wanted to purchase a building, and not only that, but I wanted the person to sell it to me for about $1 million less than he wanted.
Cheers.
So what I did was, instead of coming to him and saying, hi, Mr. Moshe, I would like to buy this building, but it's not worth it, it is worth it. I spent 95% of the time just talking to him and becoming his friend. Making eye contact,
wow.
Smiling, and just becoming his friend. I'm like, oh, where do you live? Oh, your kids live where? They live in Tom's River, they live in Flatbush, they live in Borough Park. Very interesting. Oh, are you related to so-and-so? And I would throw little compliments just to make him feel good, because I was selling myself. I am not selling a product.
Wow.
It's never about selling. Who cares if you sell fertilizer, real estate, garbage bags? It doesn't make a difference. We all need these products. And of course, ultimately, you want to sell it. But stop selling. Nobody wants to be sold. People do business with people. They don't do business with products, right?
Right.
They don't do business with garbage bags and real estate and grass. They do business with people. People will bet much easier on the jockey than on the product.
Wow.
So if they like you, they'll deal with you. Just to say, we have better service, we're cheaper. Okay, of course, at some point you may have to be less expensive to get in the door. But if you're going to sell yourself because you're selling something for cheaper, then the second you're not a penny cheaper, you're out, because you sold a product for a penny cheaper.
Right.
So it's all about that penny cheaper. So if I come to you and I'm like, I could sell you insurance, but I can give it to you for $300 a month instead of $310 that he's charging you, the minute that there's a problem or it changes or circumstances change, I'm out.
Right.
So I spend most of the time becoming your friend.
It's amazing.
Selling myself, giving you the confidence, complimenting you, because people like talking. People like compliments. If I give you a compliment, it's very hard for you to be rude after that. So this
wow.
is my pitch. I would come to you and I would say, hi, Ellie. You're from where? From Muncie? Is that next to Forche? Is that next to Wesley? I was at the Svarim store and I saw they sold it. So I'm starting to become your friend that way. And then I ask you a little bit about your children or if you want a coffee. And I made 90% of the conversation about that and maybe about the building that I was looking to buy and ask, what do you think the opportunities are? What offers have you been offered? So very soft as I'm getting to the close.
Right.
And then, you know, I'll usually say, if it's a joint venture, I'll say, I'd like to offer you the opportunity to partner with me
wow.
in this endeavor.
Yeah.
So I'm never saying please. I don't use words like please, help me, tzedakah, charity.
Yeah.
It's always like, I would like to offer you the opportunity to partner with me in this endeavor.
Right.
When a business person hears the word opportunity, partner, they don't hear, please do me a favor, it's not worth it. They don't hear negative. Never use negative things. Never use, and again, please is also negative because, you know, you're dealing with their subconscious, you know, saying, do me a favor. And people in business are not in the doing favor business. Either I'm doing you a favor or I'm doing business.
Wow.
So if it's a partnership, I'll offer them that.
Right.
And I truly try to come across authentic. Never be a fast talker. People think when they pick up the phone to call someone, it's, they think what as many words they can get into that 30 seconds, they said more. The faster you talk, the worse off you are. Yeah.
How would you go about selling a service, which is basically you're asking somebody to commit?
So this is what I would...
It's a lot. In a sense, it's even deeper and more difficult than offering a partnership or something like that.
So again, it's always about understanding and hearing them. So if, let's say, I was selling social media services or marketing, I would call up and I would say, Ellie, again, I love that you sell flooring. I think that your website is beautiful. And I remember bumping into you at the JCon show. You had a beautiful booth. And I hear great things from people in the industry about your product. So first of all, you just gave them a great compliment. So the hanging up on you and yelling at you is probably not happening. So now, the second thing you say, I noticed that you are very effective when it comes to having a beautiful website, but when I checked your Instagram and your LinkedIn, it's not telling the same story. Tell me, what is it that you do to get the word out there? Because if you think about it, you have the potential of 10,000 people on LinkedIn to buy into your brand. So what is it that you do? And then they're responsibly like, I don't know, you know, have Ruchi at the end of the day, she gives a quick post, or I'm not really into it, does it really help? And then you sell them, but in a soft way, trying to help them. You say, Sal, you'd be so surprised that if you had a great brand representation on LinkedIn, you would see what a difference it makes. Again, don't say charge monthly. Stop. Don't talk about you now. Now you're trying to help them figure right. them. So you say, Sal, if you were to have a great branding on, you know, on LinkedIn and on social media, I think it would really change everything for you. And there's a few different ways you could do it. You could do a post. You could do a photo on Instagram. You could do the stories. You can do maybe tutorial videos to show added value to people right. without soliciting them. But if you do those things, you'll notice that over that next 3 to 6 months, people are going to start trusting your brand. And you're used to spending like big money. Here, you don't even have to spend a lot of money. And for like under maybe $5,000 or $10,000, you can get that going. Right. So you just also minimize the $5,000 and $10,000. You sold them very soft without saying, this is what I do, sign with me.
Right.
Once they build the confidence that you care about them and you're helping them, then you get to the finish line.
Right.
I'm selling JCon booths and sponsorships. I sell the JCC all day long, right? I have to raise over $1 million a year for all these wonderful things. So if I came to you and I said, Ellie, I'm helping people with Tamcha Shabbos. Please, please, please give me money. Please give me money. I have 300 girls in the youth programs. If not, they wouldn't be able to go. Please. People here are like, stop. I have Tamcha Shabbos and Atzol and I have my shul and I have... Stop.
Right.
But when you come to the people and you start, before you approach them, try to think what correlates to what they care about, right? So let's say I'll go to a bank and I'll say, or I went to Con Edison and I said, Con Edison, I'm building a beautiful library to help the children of the community. I know that you love partnering with community because you care about community.
Wow.
And I would like to offer you the opportunity to partner with me in this endeavor. So you and I are going to become partners to do this.
Right.
I'm not asking you for a favor. I'm offering you to be my partner to do a library together. So I'm going to build the library. Would you give me a $30,000 grant to pay for the librarian?
Right.
And they gave me $30,000. So I tried thinking, what's the value to them? How do I tell them the story? So it's never about trying to sell.
Right.
It's about offering them and hearing them, complimenting them, and then slowly coming to that close.
I love it.
And that's how I've been. And the more you do it, the more you do it, and the better you'll become. But you also have to come from a true place of caring. If you make believe, and you're like, oh, I'm going to tell him this, I'm going to tell him this, and then I'm going to kill him, it's going to come across.
Absolutely.
So try to be authentic and really care right. about the person, and you're going to see how everything turns around.
Wow.
So just to recap, compliment, let them talk, make them feel good. Make it about selling yourself, not the product. Truly care. and then you'll watch the you know how to say bacon. So watch the challah come home.
Very nice. I do social media management for companies. And my brother Shmili, he does flooring for companies. And he's great at what he does. He has 5 years experience and he's confident and he's a tough guy and he's working now with a lot of big projects across the city and stuff. And we were discussing this on Shabbos about being confident with our product. And we were discussing how we are confident. Like, we used to dream about it, but now we're both confident in our space. And we're discussing how, like, we don't even have competition because there is no competition for him and his business, no competition. I am me and he is, like, I love what you said, we're selling ourselves and you can't change that.
It's
like
true.
You are you.
You have great energy and people like that, so they're buying into your brand. You should know that I'm on many WhatsApp chats with different builders and we started one WhatsApp chat that is just about giving information.
Wow.
So when any of the 200 contractors, they want to know who my floor guy is and who my gate guy is and who my stucco guy is. You're never losing money. You never have a competition because at the end of the day, there's enough for everyone.
Right.
And if you're not making business, it's not because really the guy took away your job. It's because
right.
you didn't have the ability to sell yourself or to sell your job, or maybe you have to improve your product. Or, of course, everything starts with Siyata Dishmaya, but then you have to put in something called willpower, something called Hishtadlis. And if you never view, like what I remember when I started, I had this pushback when I started my nonprofit, people didn't want to share information. And it bothered me so much that today I'm probably the biggest open book
and
when
sharing.
It comes to sharing. So when
wow.
it comes to business, nonprofit, I, on the way here, spoke to another organization. He asked me, how do you get money from city, from state? I said, I'm going to finish the podcast. I'm going to have 1 hour and 15 minutes on the way home.
Wow.
Call me. I'll explain to you the systems on the city, on the state side, and how to frame. Because it's never what you say in life. This is, by the way, another sales technique. And if you forget everything else, remember this. It's never what you say. It's only how you say it.
Wow.
So it's not, oh, I sell floors. It's how you say it. So if you say it right, you'll do well. And of course, you know, it gets frustrating because you hear this podcast and Ellie's great, so everyone's going to hear this podcast. But you feel like, oh, I heard these few words and I'm going to be better at it. It takes practice. I also took a public speaking course to become better at this. But remember, smile, be happy. I was in shul just last Thursday night. An Israeli came over to me and he says, you know, he says, I said, sir, you seem like a great guy. And here's my credit card, so it's not about this. But do me a favor. The next person you speak to, bring the volume level up a little bit and smile. Watch this. I'm going to get money from my kids. Or, Shalom Aleichem. He looks at my tefillin battle. Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Yehoshua. I'm coming from Eretz Yisrael. Baruch Hashem, I'm making a chasana for my daughter. She's 19. She's marrying Moshe Hirsch. And I'm short about $20,000. It would mean so much to me if you could maybe help me with $180.
Wow.
Wouldn't that change, instead of you like talking and crying and make... Because they think the more they beg and cry, I'm going to feel bad.
Right.
But the problem is, number one, I don't speak Hebrew as well as you do. Number two, you're speaking under your breath. Number two, people don't want... They want to buy into you. They want to appreciate you for a man that came from Eretz Yisrael, that's a Rosh Hashiva, wearing a frock with 14 children, Mois Nefesh Vatara. They want to buy into it. So give them the ability. Don't
wow.
just people don't want to hear Atzvis. They want
new,
energy.
I have a new
they want to hear
now.
Ellie Weber in the house.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I feel
so
like
remember, sell yourself, not the product.
Right. I feel like when people come to me for social media services, there's two types of people. Not one, they heard already about me. They've heard the success. I love when people like that call me. They're like, yes, I spoke to another one of your clients. They're seeing great results. I'm ready to start. That's beautiful. Another client is the guy trying to figure out what's happening. And in the beginning, I would totally make this about me, try to sell my business. Now, and Baruch Hashem also, it's easier to say because my business, Baruch Hashem, is in a good position. We have like 20 clients. It's running great. So I am not desperate. But now it's always about helping that person. So many people I'll turn away. I'll tell them, do it yourself, or it's not going to make you money. Some people think, like organizations call me, I always tell them, this is not, nobody's on social media to give money to an organization. It's only about brand awareness, which at that point they say, okay, it's not interesting for me. But the point is, I'm always here to help them. Sometimes I'll tell them, look, just go call this girl. She does it for $500 a month. You don't have to pay $3,000 a month. Like it's, or do it yourself, I tell them sometimes.
So I think that a lot of people don't know what they need. I would never...
So I'm here to help them, I feel like. I'm here to give them the honest truth, which, and it's not about me making money. It's about them not wasting money.
So I think what you're doing is correct. But I think at the same token, I would never turn people away because half the people, or 99% of people in certain industries like nonprofits, they don't even know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. So what I would do is instead of saying, oh, get someone for $500, it's not worth it, I don't need you, you don't need me, just do brand awareness. I don't agree. I think that brand awareness equals donations and equals, you know, them starting to understand. So if you just reframe, or as I mentioned before, if you just create a different angle, like you can tell me any organization and any reason and any conversation that they had, and in less than 30 seconds, I will show you how I can reframe it and they'll become your customer. Because they're begging for you to give them a solution. Right. They don't want, even if they say, I don't need it, it doesn't make sense. What they're really saying is, can you please explain to me how I will make $1 million? Right. Maybe not in the short term.
But what if I don't see a way they'll make $1 million?
So the answer is that...
I had this literally. Could, I had a successful organization called me last week, and I was talking to him for 15, 20 minutes. He was trying to tell me a lot of ways how he thinks he can make money, or how he has actually spent in the past $4,000 a month on social media, which would have been a great client for me. But I kept on telling him, look, I don't think social media will make you money.
Tell me any organization, anything, and watch me give you a response how I would close it.
This organization takes care of teenagers for school.
To get teenagers into school?
Into school, yes.
Okay, and what was he trying to get? Brand awareness or make money?
Students.
He wants students?
Yes.
So he wanted to do brand awareness to bring students?
Yes, he felt that like the little girls are on Instagram and they'll come from there to his school.
Okay, so again, I don't want to spend the podcast going through most of the dynamics, but essentially what I would tell him is I think what you do is great.
Yeah.
And I feel that it has a true position in Klal Yisrael to really advance this entire category. I think that you can definitely be helped. Again, never negative. I think it could definitely help you in terms of brand awareness. What I would suggest is because the younger generation is more visual, I would probably do like TikTok and Instagram videos and stories. So we would have to create a brand of what's the mission? What story do we want to tell? So number one, you have to be out there. So what story are we going to tell on Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, not really. So what I could do is I can tell that story to give you the branding. The word will get out there. People will start sending it on WhatsApp. So it's going to help you with your branding. So it may not lead point A to funding, but if you want children to come, it's going to, you know, bring children to come to you. Now, keep in mind, if you want it to be successful, it's not only about making the video and being on social media, but maybe we get influential people to be on it, or we have a good theme of what this video is going to be about to make sure that it travels. But I think that if you want branding, which is going to bring students, it could be done. Don't expect it to be within the next 1 to 2 months. But if you have a 6-month plan and you're willing to spend, let's say, you know, $3,000 a month over the next 6 months, I feel that we can accomplish branding you, getting students into you, and then down the line, that will perhaps transmit into making money off it, which will be part two. So that's what I would sell them. Because every client is a client. Yeah.
Right.
By the way, I have to tell you, I saw a great tagline on a company's website. They wrote, why go elsewhere and get ripped off when you can come to us? and then I passed the restaurant upstate New York. It said, eat here or we'll both starve. Right?
No. Yeah.
But listen, you're great at what you do, but I'm just trying to...
I feel like I'm great at what I do, but I feel like I don't have experience. Exactly. But that's the bottom line. I'm doing this for 2 years, Kanai Nahara. And like what you just explained, I never felt that way. I felt I went to the core of my honesty or comfort zone, I would say. If I'm comfortable to help you, I'll help you. Something like this, which is so true, and this organization obviously has money. He even expressed to me that his last company, he paid $4,000. That would have been more than enough for our company to take him on and help him. So I'm going to call him back, Amir Tashem. But the idea is that you're right. The way you framed it and the way that I can be more honest and open-minded to helping a wider range of companies is truly amazing. Thank you.
I would never think about it in terms of the money or the time frame. I have to truly feel that I will accomplish his goal. It could be I will, it could be I won't. But if I don't feel that I will really add value, then I wouldn't do it. But again, I have business experience and I have nonprofit experience and I run over 25 projects. So I'm speaking a little bit from experience doing this for many years. But when I said it, you could see that I'm coming across with honesty because I truly believe it.
I'm thinking the same thing I had now with a cleaning company also. They called me and I was telling him, very much like, no, it's not worth it. You know, your service business, you're doing cleaning, you're on Instagram, it's not going to help you. And this guy actually kept on pushing back, which is maybe it's a tactic that can work sometimes. But he was like, no, I just want to be there, I just want to have a nice page because all the other companies have a nice page and whatever, blah, blah, blah. But in the way you said it, what you just told
me. Give me another company, I'll pitch you back.
I'm saying it's a flooring company.
Does flooring what? Installation,
I'm sorry, it's a cleaning company.
He does cleaning for what? Commercial, institutional?
Yeah.
So I do agree with him that just having a page is not going to bring him necessarily business. But what I would rather do is tell him, okay, I think that your medium is going to be, we may put you on Instagram just to have a presence, but you're going to be able to really capitalize on LinkedIn because that's where the business community is. And we have two options, either by putting a post, but writing something that's of interest, relevant, not, I came to Chase Bank and I cleaned the floor at 2 o'clock in the morning. I looked at the window, there was no one. Like, no one's interested.
Yeah.
Maybe do a tutorial about how you clean floors and how you save money. Right. Like, if you take a look at my J Builders account where I build retail homes, right? Because one of the things I do is I have a construction company. I build homes for people.
Right.
So I made a series of videos that are under 57 seconds with a beautiful little music and a logo that pops up before and after. And it's 57 seconds of not saying, hi, this is Josh, and free estimate, and nothing. It just says, you're going to build a house and spend $1 million. It's going to be the greatest purchase that you make in your lifetime, and you know nothing about it.
Wow.
So that's my premise. So I come on and I say, today, we're going to be discussing what's the difference between split unit air conditioning, central air conditioning, in-floor heating, boilers, so you can make an educated decision when you build your home. And I show them in a video, in 57 seconds, all the differences, and I offer them if they want to get in touch with me or comment. So I gave them a real value without pitching them.
Right.
So now they keep on seeing a professional. Giving so when they're ready, they call. So the flooring guy that does maintenance, if he made a little video, and it's not that expensive because you can do 20 57-second clips in one shoot, and then you can take it back to the studio and turn it into videos and schedule them every Sunday or every Monday.
He's sharing cleaning advice.
And then he comes across, A, as a professional in the industry, someone that's giving added value. And because he's on LinkedIn now for 20 Sundays in a row, the people that need his service are going to start picking up on him.
Right.
So yes, branding, it will help you. And B, it will help you for sales in that specific medium.
Right.
So that's how you would pitch him.
Impressive. Thank you. By the way, you're also a coach? Do you take on clients, or this is so far?
So it's so interesting. So I used to do it in charge.
Oh, yeah?
And I used to do very well with it. As you can see, I have experience. I'm not smart, but I have experience. And then a few years ago, I decided I'm going to try as much as possible to do it as a chesed.
Wow.
But it's interesting. Because people weren't paying, my success rate went from like 90 to 60%. Because instead of people taking notes, they say,
oh, he's giving it
interesting. Oh, I love it. Very interesting. Right. But if you paid me $1,000 or $500 to hear what I said, you wouldn't want to lose the money that you invested. So you would be taking notes. Like, there's a lot of the major, major nonprofit organizations that you know. So they've been in our office. And Chas v'Shalom, I'm not trying to be, you know, I'm just saying that I care about all these nonprofits and I have experience I try to share. And I can tell in the first 2 minutes if they're going to be successful. When they come to talk to me for an hour and they don't write one note, I know we're out.
Wow.
When they come down with a book and with the chief of staff, with the secretary, and they start asking me questions and details and write notes, I know that they care. So if you ask me, so the answer is I am a coach. I try to do a chesed, but I also do it as a paid gig. for larger companies and nonprofits who want to invest in it as well.
Right. We didn't touch on anything personal, Shia, but I would love to go in there a little bit. How do you deal with burnout, fear, anxiety, business, the ups, the downs, if you want to talk about it.
Always try to be positive. I love to be with positive people, be positive. This is going to be very unconventional and not popular and probably not even the right approach, but I try not to deal with failure as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Like my mother passed away a couple of years ago in a car accident, and people are like, oh, how did you deal with it in therapy? I'm like, next. Like I try not to dwell on the past and feel bad for yourself. I remember I was maybe 21 years old and I was having a very hard time when I started my business and trying to figure it out. And I felt really bad. And my wife said something to me that lasted until this day. She said, the first day that you stop feeling bad for yourself will be the first day of the rest of your life. Wow. So, like, you can feel bad for yourself. You can be a victim. Today it's very cool. Everyone has to find a reason to be a victim. A wife happens to be a brilliant answer to 99% of the world's problems. It's true, because whenever you have someone, you know, you could look at it, oh, she's bothering me, she's telling me what to do. But at the same token, she's also giving you constructive feedback and constructive criticism. And she truly doesn't mean to put you down. She really is saying the things because she wants you to advance. So ultimately, I see the people that are married are much more... They're much more motivated to make more money and to do things because they have that push. Again, I'm not talking about a 21, 22, 23-year-old person, but when you see a 35-year-old man, within 1 minute, you can tell if he's married or not.
Absolutely.
So it's not... And
it's
again,
a confidence.
Single people, great. Married people, great. There's always generalizations to everything. I'm just giving you a very general generalization. I hope I don't get any negative feedback. I love all, and I'm saying this in the best of ways. So,
Do you think that we have a shidduchim crisis right now?
For those that are married, we don't.
Well, we have a happiness crisis, maybe.
I think it's all relative. You know, there could be a shidduchim crisis, but you know, like when I put up a development, someone told me, "You're spending so much money, and the market is going down and it's going up." I said, "Look, out of all the people that live in Borough Park and Williamsburg, wherever I'm building the development, I only need 5 people or 10 people."
Right.
So you only have to worry about one person, and then there's no crisis.
Right.
I think it's easy to say that there is a crisis, and maybe there is, but I think that you just have to focus one at a time, and then there'll be no crisis.
Because
as long
that.
As you solve yours, no more crisis for you, no more crisis for
I
you.
I love that. That's so smart. It's genius. Yeah, because I always say there's enough boys, there's enough girls. How is this considered a crisis? You also seem like a very calm person. Is that like a natural thing in you? What does it take to get you upset?
So I actually had a broker I was talking to on the way here. He told me the same thing. So I think I tried really maturing myself as much as possible to become more easygoing. And I think it's somewhat of a natural... you know, who I am, but I think I definitely worked on it over time to try to be, you know, poise and confidence without being arrogant, to try to be understanding, always try to put yourself in the other person's shoe, try to think of how the other person, if you want to be a good salesperson, think that person's position, and that will make you a better salesperson. So I think it's a combination of just trying. And having emuna and feeling that, you know, it's whatever's meant to be. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, if someone throws a rock through the glass of a window, it's going to bother me. And, you know, but I try as much as possible.
How does it feel to have a lot of money? I mean, they call it FU money, right? Like, how does that feel?
I wouldn't know. I try to pay my bills and... what I do for a living is really try to help people.
Wow.
I try to, Baruch Hashem, together with other great people, we try to affect the lives of over 21,000 people a year.
Wow.
But I need to make parnassa, so Baruch Hashem, I do all these different endeavors to try to make something to pay.
And there is a JCon event coming up July 7th?
July 9th.
July 9th, okay, almost got it. And this is a real estate event. There's going to be real estate courses, a lot of real estate people. Tell us a little bit about events. Why is it beneficial for young entrepreneurs to go to events? Sure. Why do you enjoy events? I know why I enjoy events, because it's just fun. It's a lot of fun.
So I think going back to the first thing that you mentioned, you know, we come out of yeshiva, we start a business, we start a job, we want to excel, but we don't know, like, how do you go from having a job to having a business? How do you go from having a small business where you're selling custom closets and turning that from a job of selling custom closets to having a company?
Right.
Because having a job is not having a company, because the second you leave your company, there is no company, there is no job, there's nothing. Also, sometimes you'll say, I made $200,000 as a business owner selling custom closets, and now that I have $1 million in sales, I'm actually losing $100,000 a year because now I'm paying rent and trucks and drivers, insurance,
wow,
cars, girls. Like, how did I sell $200,000 and make money, and now I'm selling $1 million and I'm losing money?
Are you saying that as you scale, you got to make
exactly
sure all the parts... Because I saw it a little bit in my business, if I can be honest over here. We're now up to 7-8 people, Kanayanada. And what I noticed is a little bit similar. I mean, we're still building everything, right? There's more clients, there's more employees. But I also started seeing this, that the more clients, there's also, okay, so now we added a secretary, and now we added another content creator, and now we added another position. So how does that something that you teach at these events, how to scale
a company?
Yeah,
so every event is a little bit different. So let's say the real estate event addresses, so there are some courses relating to real
estate. I was mentioning about my company because I actually enjoyed the building process. That's what I meant. It's like
right,
putting pieces into the puzzle. Like, okay, another client or another employee, and it's beautiful, and I watch my numbers as well, but it's a very fun aspect. But yeah,
so the real estate event is more geared specifically to people in real estate construction management development, and the reason why I do it as a nonprofit is twofold. First of all, the money and the income that comes in helps me to give free courses to more people. So that's how I use it as a business to help my organization without me having to pay for it.
Right.
Because I spend, let's say, $200,000 or $300,000 on this line item.
Yeah.
So who's paying all the teachers, and who's paying all the courses, and who's paying for all the things? So that's how I use it as a business, and the sponsors
wow
pay. But essentially what the JCon Real Estate is for people that not want to get into the business. But if you've been in the industry for the last 1 to 5 years, and you want to become better at sales, at mortgage, finance, make the connections, there's two very important things that happen here. Number one, there are very successful people who are willing to give up their time, and you can do one-on-one with a lot of these successful people.
Wow.
So let's say this fellow did $1 billion in mortgage origination. He's willing to sit with you. This guy did $1 billion in real estate development. He's willing to answer your question.
Actually, or they're just
going
to be there?
I have 10 different people that sit at a table,
oh,
and they're
wow
willing to give an hour of their time.
Can you make an 11th table for me?
Exactly, I will. So basically, I have these mentors.
It's impressive.
But besides for that, I figure if I have 300 guys who just entered the industry within the last 5 years, and I bring another 500 people who are seasoned professionals, and we mix them together, business happens, right?
Yeah.
Because people do business with people. They don't do business with real estate. They don't do business
absolutely
with development. They don't do business with advertising. People do business with people. And when you spend your time not saying, oh, hi, Ellie, I do insurance. Here's my card. Here's my card. Stop. Don't sell.
Yeah.
Say, hi, Ellie. What do you do? Where do you live?
Yeah.
Who's your brother-in-law? Become his friend. So when you go to the JCon Real Estate and you're that 1 to 5 year guy who entered the industry and you spend all your time becoming 20 people's friends, you don't have to become 100 people's friends. Try to become 5-10 people's friends, understand what they do, and exchange contact info. Obviously, if the guy says, I sell umbrellas, and you feel like it's never going to go anywhere, you can be nice and move
yeah
on to the next, you know, bar that has a better drink
yeah
and the cigar lounge. But try to find people who you have common ground with. Don't sell them. Become their friend. So that's really what JCon Real Estate is.
Yeah.
It's really about helping people with Parnassa, make Parnassa, find mentors. And we do it for many different industries. And then I have about 3,000 people a year who have courses by us.
Wow.
Excel, Word, time management, public speaking, AutoCAD, and the list goes on. Photography, marketing, social media. We actually have I have a professor from Houston University that teaches social media marketing for free.
Wow.
And another one from Turo who teaches a different part of marketing. So we
yeah
offer all these different courses in person and online. And that's really what JCon does. So the upcoming JCon on Tuesday, July 9 is focused on real estate. So it's only for people who have already entered real estate or management, construction, development in that space to help them grow, be successful,
yeah,
and meet Amcha Yisrael, because Anachni Tzrichim Panusim.
Oh, man. Very nice. Thank you so much. Are you any update in the music world? Are you still singing? Are you working on a music, an album, a single? Because so, I know you sing very nicely.
Thank you. So I am a chazan in the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
Wow.
And I go to different hotels, like I was just in Italy for Pesach to be a chazan in a hotel. So I still do
that.
You
have a very powerful voice and a sweet voice at the same time.
I did put out 2 albums and about 10 or 15 singles.
Wow. Anything recently or anything coming?
The last one was last year's Sukkahs. But I do have a few in the works. So I think over the next 3 to 6 months, I should have another 2 or 3 out.
Nice.
Are you
composing it, the songs?
So some of them I compose, or partially, like I'll do the lyrics and not the tune, or vice versa. I do actually have one that I made, but I'm contemplating if I should put it out. So because it's a little bit dark, it speaks about a very sore topic. So the question is if it's, you know, the right medium.
I want to hear it.
So I hear the pros and cons.
Yeah.
I'll show you not only the
video.
Is it,
do you have Shir Rubenstein on Spotify? If people want to check it out
on
now?
Spotify and iTunes,
Apple,
YouTube.
Okay,
You can see all the videos.
I'll put the link in Mitzvah in the description.
Yeah, please. So it's either Shir Rubenstein at Gmail or YouTube. Yeah,
right.
I'm on every platform. And it's about spreading love, positivity, I love happy people, happy energy. And as long as you're positive and happy, you can really accomplish anything. It was the Baal Shem Tov who said, if you cry, you can cry to Hashem and you can accomplish. But what you can accomplish with simcha, atzvus does not accomplish.
Wow.
So meken vainen, meken davenen, in sehelft, abivus metitov met simcha, kenish atzvus hoftin.
Amazing. Anything else here that you're passionate about that we didn't discuss in this conversation? A business venture, a journey, a something that you
Think we covered a lot, and I think that it was a great opportunity to sit with your demographic of young entrepreneurs. And what I would like to leave with your demographic is learn from Ellie to be energetic, be happy, and please feel free to join our events. You know, if you go to attend JCon, you'll see the real estate or the other venues, ventures that we do, or you can visit jccmp.org, and you'll see all the different programs and services we offer to the community. And the easiest is probably to sign up on the website to receive our emails. Like this, every week you'll see what we're up to. So if you find something of interest, you can always tap into it. And even though we're called the JCC of Marine Park, because we started there and our headquarters is there, we still are a citywide organization helping people throughout the 5 boroughs of New York City and beyond. And I think it's just an opportunity to thank you for who you are and what you do. And if I can be helpful in the mix, I'd love to.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Shia, for doing this. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, reminder to please like this episode. If you enjoyed it, share it with a friend that can enjoy it. Subscribe and turn on the notification so you don't miss another episode. I just love that it goes out to so many people. So by subscribing, it just helps the channel grow. If you're on Spotify or Apple, iTunes, whatever, please leave rate the podcast and stuff like that. Again, the link to my WhatsApp, if you want to join conversations, or if you have any questions, or if you want to reach out to me, or follow my WhatsApp status where I post interesting content, click the link in the description, and that will lead you to my WhatsApp, or you can follow me on Instagram and LinkedIn or other social platforms. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you.